Welcome to the Drunk Guys Book Club, where books aren't just for school, where book clubs aren't just for women, and all our rituals are about beer.
I'm Mike.
I'm Nate.
I'm Jimmy.
And we're the Drunk Guys, and this week we are reading Titus Groan by Mervyn Peake, and I'm starting with a beer. So as will become clear very quickly, we didn't like this book, and it took a very long time to read. And every time I turned the page, I started the book, I was like, oh, you'll finish this book or this chapter in 1 hour. But then quickly it would turn into 120 minutes because it just dragged on forever. And this is Dogfish Head 120-minute IPA because I was either this or another fucking Voodoo Ranger, and this is what I had. And it's 17% alcohol, which is the most exciting thing I could say about this book, that I'm going to get drunk.
I am opening my beer now because I don't want to wait for three quarters of the way through the book
to be over
to talk about it. So I'm just opening it.
This is going to be a short episode. There's nothing to say.
Yeah.
But you know, the most important thing actually happens in the... Did you guys read the About the Author page?
Nope.
I read part of it.
It's the best part of the book.
He was a really weird guy.
Mervyn Peake was born in 1911 in Kuling, central southern China. Blah, 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 blah. A gifted book illustrator, he is remembered for Ride a Cock Horse. That's... He wrote a book called Ride a Cock Horse.
It had a ride a cock, comma, horse?
There's no comma, so I don't know what it means.
Oh, God. I think that's worse.
Yeah. Ride a cock horse.
I don't know.
Maybe it's like a translated thing.
I'm going to Google it, and I'm going to find out some weird stuff.
Did you mean Mr. Hands?
Wait, is cock horse one word?
Two words.
Okay.
Ride a cock, space, horse.
There's a song called Ride a Cock Horse to Banbury. A cock horse is a fucking, it's a fucking, what's it?
I don't want to know what it is. I want to
know. Rocking horse.
Well, you know what? You could rock on it.
Ride a cock horse. Yeah. It's a fucking toy horse thing that you ride with the rocking chair legs on it that you little kids have.
I know what, yeah, of course I know what that is. Yeah.
I guess. I don't know why you call it that.
But Ride a Cock Horse is what he's remembered for, illustrating.
I mean, I remember that too.
And that's what I remember from the book. Everything else, tell us what you thought.
It's one of those cock horses. It's one of those things you just can't unhear, or you just can't ever hear it the way it
leaves
used to
a
be.
Mark
it's,
in you.
It's just like Batman's boners. You just can't think of it in any way. Except the way.
I could think of Batman's boners in a couple of ways.
Oh, yeah. Easily.
Not the way now. It was originally intended, I mean.
Did I send you the comic, and it was like Commissioner Gordon's like, Batman, what are your new plans to fight crime? And Batman's like, I have a list. It's like, these are just tax cuts for the rich. Batman leaves. All right. Two things not about this book.
This book was requested by an email that we regrettably listened to.
Fucking. So, I think this was our first troll recommendation.
You told him this was on your list of books that you intended to read one day, and you were wrong, Michael.
I can't pick anything anymore. I shouldn't be trusted.
This is like one of the deep cuts for fantasy nerds. They fucking love
but
this book.
It's not fantasy. What?
Where's the fantasy?
Where's the
I don't
magic?
Know, but they like it.
It's in your imagination.
I think it's just because it's
something
in a fucking
happening.
Castle. It's in a castle, and it's castle stuff is happening. That's it.
Yes,
I fantasized that something happened in the book.
So... It was recommended, and I did want to read this, partly because it has a evocative, weird name. You're like, what is that? That sounds cool. And what is Gormenghast, besides, I think it's a cold soup from Hungary.
It's Ramstein's festival they put on every year.
Oh, yeah, that's what it is. Featuring the finale where they all paddle the keyboard player while he wears bondage gear and a gas mask.
No, they do a water slide out of a giant goatsy.
Ew. And then everyone rides a horse cock.
Yeah.
So then, so I heard about it. It's like, ooh, people have praised it. And it's even in that, dreaded 1001 books you should read before you die book.
People compare it to Lord of the Rings because it came out at a certain similar time.
I could not picture a book that has less to do with Lord of the Rings because Lord of the Rings, they go somewhere.
They go to other rooms in this one.
They stay and back again. In
there
one
and
place.
Back again.
That's The Hobbit.
It's also Lord of the Rings.
So I really wanted to like this book too. I'm really upset that I didn't.
I will say it was like beautifully written. I did see a review that called it prose porn. You know, like nothing happens, but it happens really
look
nicely.
Look how that modifier is just dangling there. Such a girthy prepositional phrase. That redundant clause makes me so wet and moist.
There's so many semicolons, it's like I'm getting a train run on me.
Oh. So we'll get back to that. What is the book about?
The book is about nothing. Just kidding.
It's Seinfeld, the fantasy novel.
It does meet the definition of having a plot. It's just not a very good one. So
a lot of things do happen. It takes a long time for them to be described.
Yes. Okay. So first, the beginning of the book is like people are all having a party because the boy has been born. And so you find out in the first couple of chapters that this whole thing takes... Well, first of all, this whole thing is going to take place in this big, giant old castle that has like a old-timey like... So they have a cook, you know, a head chef, but also like an army of basically like cooks who keep everyone fed, even though there seem to be only like 8 people that actually live there. So
I think it's feeding also all of the help.
Yeah.
They say the castle is like, it's massive. It's like its own city almost.
Because it's been there. The current lord of Gormenghast is the 76th lord. And each one over the centuries has just added shit to it. So it's like Topkapi Palace. It's like they just keep adding rooms and wings and portcullises or whatever to it to make it.
A little bit of portcullis.
In 76 generations, that's like at least 1,000 years, if not more than that.
But they're inbred, you know, gentry, so some generations are probably brief.
Yeah. So, son has been born. And you meet first, very briefly, the lord named Sipple something.
What's
Sipple
his name?
Sipple Crave. Sipple Crave. Isn't that a black metal band?
Yeah, great.
That's the fantasy part there.
Yeah. Yeah. Sipple Crave. And then.
It's my White Castle Sepultura cover band. Sipple Crave.
But you also meet this weird kid. Okay, so you meet the head. This book is so fucking dumb. I can't even believe it.
It's
okay,
a
so
bunch of characters.
You meet a bunch of characters. You meet the head, servant dude. His name is Flay, and Flay runs in the kitchen.
Flay
runs.
Queen.
Flay runs into this 17-year-old kid named Steerpike, who is working in the kitchens but hates it, and so follows Flay up the stairs to see where the baby is and, you know, stuff like that. So when he goes to the kitchens, everybody is incredibly drunk and everyone is just like, hey, we've got the son was born, the heir. And then
Titus.
Flay and Steerpike go upstairs and they see like, you know, where the countess's rooms, and it's really bizarre because she has a lot of birds and a lot of cats, and I really don't see how those two are really going to work out very well.
They're in separate rooms because the cats all stay in one big ass room full of cats, which must smell abominable.
Also, the room with the birds. Can I just say?
Yeah,
because they're indoors. It's really not going to go well.
These are castle people. Nobody smells good.
And so the countess is clearly incredibly weird. And also, she's like, find Flay, find a wet nurse, because I don't want to see the child.
It's ugly.
Yeah, they say it's ugly.
Violet eyes.
Yeah,
everyone's
but
weird
then,
about that.
Does that matter again for the rest of the book? Nope,
maybe
not at all.
I got the sense in this book that almost everyone was ugly or kind of weird looking, like all the adults in Coraline.
Well, they are British.
Oh, yeah. And they've all been in the castle for 1,000 years, all probably like ghastly pale and inbred.
Yeah, there was some description of the Countess at some point that said, like, she had bony protuberances where people normally had layers of fat. And someone's like, she had, like a weird bony ass or something like that. And I don't know.
Is that the Countess or that was the doctor's sister?
Oh,
she was like
squalor's sister.
She looked like a pile of bones on top of a hips. It's like, oh. I mean, you know, said much more eloquently than that, but.
Sometimes things were so eloquent, I don't know what they said.
Like, yeah, there was words, like, ah, you're just like a recumbent dream. It's like, a what?
There were a couple of words I looked up that weren't in the Kindle's dictionary. I was like, well, that's not a fucking
because they're an elfish.
Me. I have to Google this word now. And then when I can't remember what it was now, but it was like an anatomical term that he was using metaphorically. I was like, come on, dude. It's not cool. So everybody is weird looking because everybody's weird. And I think that's part of the charm of the book is that it's got unique, memorable characters. Because there's Prune, and they have absurd names that are like seem like they should mean something. Like Dr. Prune Squalor, which just sounds like when
dirty poops.
A homeless person has the runs, yeah. And then Steer Pike, which is a type of fish, I don't know.
Cowfish, yeah.
Mr. Flay is like the same. Is the Earl who would, you know, is Bobby Flay's grandfather. Like they have these bizarre weird characters and they're interesting, and that's like Mervyn Peake's creativity. I think that's what people really like about it. But they're wrong. So
yeah. Fucking wrong. Okay. So
the nanny Slag has to go find a wet nurse by going out of the castle to the gypsy village of the people who are famous for making carvings.
Which is the first page, yeah.
And also, they're all weird because they are hot for like a minute and then they turn ugly and old real fast.
I think that's probably just what happened to all young women in this part of fictional history where it's like you're 15 and like you have youth and then all of a sudden you have crushing poverty and 7 children by the time you're 21.
Yeah, but it happens to the guys in this one too. I guess because they start working in the mines and chain smoking.
Absolutely.
But instead of this, they carve stuff that are used for rituals because the book is, I guess, the plot that does exist, which is not, is they just have to do a lot of rituals all the time. And the rituals have very, very specific rules that you have to follow. And everyone hates it, except one guy whose job is making the rituals happen.
I've heard that Versailles, after 3 King Louis had lived there in a row, which was like 150 years or, you know, a really long time, Versailles had all of these elaborate rituals that people would have to do every day, including the other nobles.
Like watching the king take a shit and stuff like
that. Yeah, like dressing the king and dressing the queen and all kinds of stuff like that.
I assume this was kind of some kind of parody of, like,
that's the only way it
noble
made sense
life,
to me.
Which like we don't really have that anymore. I certainly don't have it here at all, in that sense. But I guess it's a very British joke. I guess that was my best guess.
I watched the first season of Downton Abbey, and so it's kind of it's like imagine it's Downton Abbey. This is what but it's way sillier and way creepier. It's like an old rundown castle instead of the Downton Abbey, which is basically just a big mansion.
And everyone looks haunted.
Yeah, everything has like a Tim Burton vibe to it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I also got the sense that this was meant to be funny. In a way that's so dry, it's like your mother's box. It's just arid. It is Saharan dry humor.
It's like having eczema on the inside.
Yeah. And during a drought.
Ooh.
In August.
In the Sahara.
In the Sahara, but the one that's on Mercury. It gets cemented. Like, I was the only one. I think this, because there are some funny little things, but you kind of don't even notice them, or I didn't notice them because I was working so hard to just understand what was happening. Like, there's one part where there's just describing statues or something, and there's a statue of a lion holding a guy in his mouth, and it says on the guy, like, Lord Groan's enemy. Like, that has to be a joke. That can't be meant to be taken seriously. You know, and this, and I think it's just meant to show, like, how, look at the weird shit that the aristocracy can accumulate if they're left to their own devices, including their rituals.
Well, in this, like, even the Earl, Sepulcrave Groan, he is so fucking miserable and bored because every minute of his day is prearranged with rituals of where he has to be at a certain minute, take this amount of time, and you have to walk down the hallway at a certain speed. And it's like, he hates it. All he wants to do is sit around and read. What a fucking nerd.
No, we're not judging.
Weeb.
Weeb, wow, okay.
Strong feelings from Nate.
So, it's a joke because it's a book podcast. That was the joke. Okay, so he, Flay really doesn't like Steerpike, so Flay locks Steerpike in a room. Meanwhile, Steerpike gets out of the room, but he, like, it climbs out the window and then climbs to the roof of the whole castle, which is a metaphor for him kind of taking over, even though he's, like, a kid. So, but he ends up climbing into a random attic window. Turns out that room, the room he, with all this, like crap furniture and, like, you know, all the shit you put in the attic, is the hiding spot of the teenage daughter of Lord Groan or whatever the fuck his name is. And so you would think that you've got a teenage boy and a teenage girl and that something exciting would happen. Nope, not at all. They just talk a little bit. And she's like, oh.
She's really weird.
She's very strange. And she is like, "How? Why the fuck is another person here? This is my weird space." But she does kind of find him interesting because he is like, charming, I guess.
Because he acts like a clown, and she thinks it's funny. Because she has no one to talk to ever, and she likes, I'm just going to do my thinking today in my room by myself, as she does for years. So, you know, she's probably miserable all the time. So, he's very good at finding out what people want from him, and doing that. He's the, maybe Mike, you don't remember this, but Nate, would you say he's the little finger of this book? The...
Right, yes.
Yeah. From Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones reference.
Yeah.
The guy who was not born to nobility, but is weaseled his way up through machinations over the course of the years.
Oh, that's definitely who this guy is then. There's something, I forget if he says it himself or the narration says it about him, but like, Steerpike is clever enough to know that he's clever. and he's going to work that, because he doesn't want to be a galley slave. So yeah,
which is fair.
So fuck. Like, was it my imagination, or did he leave while the king, the chef guy, was singing? Like, there was some sort of drunken singing song happening. Yeah, and he just ran away.
It was like chapter 3.
Oh yeah, how many chapters were there in this book?
207.
Like, really, too many. Each one an hour long somehow. So he finds the girl, Lady Fuchsia, and uses like her to get to meet Dr. Prune Squalor, who is the pretentious doctor who likes to talk to people so they don't understand what the fuck he's saying.
And inject them with random stuff.
Yes, he is the Mengele of the castle.
And half of his lines are, ha 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 ha.
So I switched in the middle of reading this. I switched in the first quarter of reading this, I should say, to the audiobook. And it was like, ha 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 ha. It was like, oh, what the fuck was that?
Is it like Mickey Mouse?
It was, yeah, oh, oh boy. It was, oh, gosh, Gormenghast. It was pretty, especially when I was trying to listen to it fast at like 2.5 speed.
It's like,
Alvin
and the Chipmunks.
He said, it was intense. But yeah, he takes on Steerpike as like an apprentice. Because Steerpike talks himself into the job.
Did you ever watch 30 Rock?
I did.
Nate?
I did.
Watch that. Remember when Jack Donaghy quits and then he gets his job back and he has to work his way back up from the mailroom and he gets promoted every hour over the course of the day until he's the boss again? It's like that.
Actually.
Yeah.
It's like every time he talks to someone, he's like, actually, I'm your boss. I work for you now. It's like, okay.
I think I'm due to rewatch that.
I just did. It holds up. But it's better
than... not good?
It's better than this book, which over the course of, I don't know how long it takes to read, I don't know, 10, 15 hours, has as much plot as a 15-minute episode of something.
Less.
It has as much plot as a commercial for Cars for Kids. Like, I understood there were cars, and they were for the kids.
Yeah.
And then I could have gotten a tax
write-off. I got the gist of it. So, Steerpike is working his way up the ladder, and meanwhile, other things are happening, and you're like, does any of this matter? And, you know, probably not. There's two other books in the series that I hope we don't have to read.
There are arguably four more books in the series.
I will say no.
No, absolutely not.
In not the words of Bartleby the Scrivener, I would prefer not to.
I smell a punishment book.
I was actually thinking, like, because I have
four.
A book.
And
I was
like, we got each other this punishment book.
We all pick a different one of the fucking Gorman Gas books. I'm like, that'd be the end of the podcast. I'd stop. I'd quit.
This was absolutely a punishment book. All right.
I think this person punished us. I think
they did too. Yeah. So unless, of course, they actually loved it, and now they absolutely, and now our next one star review on the podcast is going to be that guy. That's probably it.
I mean, this is a book that if you read reviews of it, like everyone that loves it is like, yeah, it's one of the best I've ever read. And there are also a lot of people who are like, nothing happened in this book. It sucks.
I read multiple reviews trying to understand why this is popular. And one book was like, it was really good. It grew on you. Like, it had to be like the right time to sit and read this book and not feel rushed, which is definitely why... a part of why this book didn't stand a chance for us this week.
Not a chance.
I think even if I wasn't rushed, I would still have been bored.
I liked the writing. I would have... Yeah. I would, if I had 3 weeks to read this, I would have probably liked it more.
I could read a page a day.
But then... there are sentences that I just wanted to reread over. I really liked them. But that reviewer ended with, I'm glad I read it, but I wouldn't recommend... I'd be really careful with recommending this to someone. Because you really have to know what they like. And I know that I've recommended books that I liked to people. And then they're like, that book was... what was that? And you're like, I'm sorry, I thought you were smart. And now I know what it's like to be on the other... I guess Michael Chabon is too highbrow for you. Or whatever.
I have recommended Lincoln and the Barter to people. And I'm like, look... it's great. You might not... I'm not going to say not get it, because I don't know if I got it, but you might hate it. I don't know.
Once I was on a Zoom, like a peak COVID, and people were like, what books have you read lately? It was like fucking lame work Zoom. And I wrote The Overstory, because we had just read that. And then the co-host was like, oh, I started that, but I haven't finished it. And I spent the rest of the fucking Zoom to be like, shame!
Like, you're literally not allowed to leave the house. Now is the only time you can read this tome.
It's like, it's so important. Asshole about it. It's like, all right, turn off my camera and I'm going to be an asshole now. And then she like, there weren't a lot of people. And she was like, I know, I really need to finish it.
And she never did.
No, she finished her. She killed herself with shame later.
So, okay.
Like Mervyn Peak. Okay.
The main thing that happens is that Steerpike works his way up through the, like, you know, ranks of the castle stuff. And then he meets the twins, which are the two most fucking annoying characters in literature.
Wow, that's a bold claim.
Wow, yeah.
They are the twin sisters of Lord Sipplecrave, and they've had strokes, so they are like mentally incapacitated.
And partially. One half, they had like epilepsy, right?
Yeah. No, I said it was strokes or something like that. They had
strokes, like half of their body doesn't work.
I thought they had something. Okay, maybe, you know, it doesn't matter. It doesn't
I think they had both. Maybe they had both. Anyway, so, yeah, but they're,
sure, why not?
But they do this weird, this stupid, like, thing where they have twins, like, finish each other's sentences and, like, they like, you know, they, oh, when I look at you, I'm seeing exactly what I look like. And then, but they're really dumb. And so Steerpike tells them, like, oh, hey, I know that you want to actually be the rulers here. I know that you two actually want to, like, have power here and not just be the two weird sisters that nobody thinks that nobody likes. So here's what we're going to do. We are going to burn down the library, which is where my beer comes in. This is because this beer. So this book was as boring as a soap opera, and only one thing of any consequence happens in the whole book, which is burning down the library. So this beer is called "As the World Burns" by KCBC, and it is a Rausch beer, Rausch beer lager. Yeah, whatever that is. It does taste smoky. I'm actually really not sure exactly what that style of beer is.
It is 5.2%. It literally means smoked beer.
Well, there you go.
Rausch beer.
No, you can taste it. Like, it definitely tastes like it's smoked.
Sometimes the smoke flavor is so strong that you think you're having, like, a cured meat when you drink it.
Like that weird fucking pastrami beer we had for Slaughterhouse.
Yeah, I think that's when we got that. Because it's the barley is dried by being smoked as opposed to being dried in a, you know, tumble dryer kind
drying
of thing
machine.
Is basically what they use.
Yeah. A washer dryer combo.
Yeah.
No, literally, somebody invented something that's shockingly similar to, like, a dryer in your home to dry kilned malt. And that's where that's how light colored beer became possible in the 1800s. Because before that, you basically had to cook it to get it to stop germinating, or whatever the fuck the right word is. And so that was how light. So this is a very traditional German style. It tastes like barbecue.
A little bit. So, okay, Steerpike tells the two sisters, hey, you are going to burn down the library, because by setting fire to the library, that is going to, like, make everything crazy, and you are going to, and that's going to make the Lord Sepulchrave crazy, and then you will have more power, because you are his sisters. But he doesn't tell them that he's going, that he, and now Steerpike, who is actually just a kid, he wants to engineer the situation so that he can, like, save people. He can, like, save everyone, be at the right place at the right time to, like, oh, everyone, there's a fire, escape, you know, save everyone, and that will, like, raise his standing. And he's also going to have them set fire to the library on the day that there's a, like, ceremony happening, which is, like, the something ceremony for the 12-day-old child. Was it 12
days? Gathering. I think that's what it was called. It was called, like, the gathering. Yeah, it was like it's like an event for the kid being born, and you know, nothing ever happens, so they didn't think anyone actually would be there. But the king wants, or the Lord wants everyone in the library at that time to do baby party.
And there's also a weird side plot with the wet nurse that did not matter fucking at all.
I have to imagine it matters for the later books.
To anything. She dies at the end. She dies. Yeah, she killed. Well, I actually did notice. I had to read that in the synopsis.
I mean, but she gives birth to another kid.
She does, yes.
So I assume that kid is important later. But I'll never find out.
Or will he?
God damn it.
So... So,
insert the narrator. Jimmy would find out. Just wait till
that's
Christmas.
When the title thing kind of pops up. The gang finds out.
I'm never reading another one of these books. The gang reads all the books. There's sleigh bells. Cue.
Fuck. So the fire happens. Steerpike, like, manages to, like, you know, look good, getting people to safety. But one guy dies. It's the old guy who, like, has all of the who knows all the rituals.
Sourdust.
but yet also Lord Sepulchrave.
All the books grown, are fucking roasted.
Like, loses his mind and goes crazy.
But also, did you guys see Beer Fest?
Many times. I've lived it.
I know. There's see the other one.
This is a spoiler for a 10, 15-year-old movie, everyone. Sorry. But when they kill off Phil.
That's a damn near 20-year-old movie.
And they kill off Phil. And they bring back his twin brother, played by the same actor, at his funeral saying, just call me Phil, Landfill. And we can skip that whole getting to know you phase. Like, oh, you forget that he was killed off at all. In this book, they replace Tower Dust with his old son, who's the same guy, but he's got one less leg. And then they all move on, and he's just like, I do the rituals now. I was like, what was the point of that? Why? It's the same character with one less leg. And he's shorter or something, but he's still just an old guy who knows all the rituals. What the fuck?
Maybe there's some sort of commentary here about the British class system.
This is like Never Let Me Go, where it's like, if you say so, man.
I think it's possible. Or I mean, at least
it must be. These must be like jokes that we just don't get as a non-aristocratic country, or at least not born into aristocracy as formally.
Didn't they have like a bunch of kings in England in the early 20th century? A couple.
Yeah, they went through a few.
They went through a few. So like maybe that was a thing like in the air, you know, that the pageantry and ridiculousness of you know, the aristocracy and their titled land and all that
bullshit.
These
weird people die off and then they're replaced by their kids who are the exact same.
Kind of. And then like everybody just falls into their place. We're all cogs in the wheel of this nonsense. And then, I mean, also like this book was 1946. Like all of a sudden those rituals, which people had only ever heard about in past generations, are now photographed and filmed and shown in newspapers. Like I smell at least a graduate school paper here.
Well, King Charles.
I'll never write.
King Charles, isn't he like 70?
He's like 1,000 older.
He's like 74 or something like that. Right. He's younger than the two candidates for president of the United States, probably.
Yes, but he is.
And his fingers look like Frankfurters.
Trump turned 78 today. He is spring chicken.
Okay, so King Charles III is 75, which means he's only 2 years younger than this book.
So only one guy dies, but then
they replace him with a kid, and then Steerpike goes to work for that guy. He's not a kid, he's an old man, because Sourdust was 1,000, he was over 90, so his son is in his 60s or 70s. So the Steerpike goes to work for that guy, so now he's like, there's only one dude that knows all the rituals. And if you know all the rituals, like, you run everything. Like, you run the daily events of the entire castle because everyone has to do everything by these rituals. And also, the Lord Sepulchrave has lost his mind and says he is now an owl. And he keeps going to the kitchen to ask him for a big fat rat out of a trap because he's an owl. He wants to eat a rat.
Well, the only thing that brought him joy was destroyed.
Yes.
And now he's trapped in this prison.
And at this point, the most bizarre subplot, if you could call it that, comes to fruition, which was that Flay, the head assistant to the king, to the lord, and the chef, Swelter, hate each other for some reason that I did not pick up on. And over the course of the book, they just keep, like, glaring at each other.
Flay,
and now they have a fight to the death.
Swelter or Swelter, something, like, there's a slight in the beginning of the book. I forget what it was.
And it escalates to a fight to the death.
Again, this could be the kind of like the squab. I think this, you know, what the fuck? I don't know what I'm saying. You know, like a comedy of manners, right? Like that. When we were texting about this,
Pride and Prejudice. If it had a genre, if you give it a genre, it is technically a comedy of manners.
That's what this book is, I think.
Yeah,
you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and it's like look at the petty fucking maitre d' guy who thinks he's really important because he gets to yell at the bus boys or whatever it is, and they're all self-important assholes.
And they're all insane.
Well, I think that's the hyperbole that's meant to show how silly this lifestyle is and how silly this worldview is. And so Flay and Swelter and Slater Kinney and whatever the other ones' names are, they all have a... for some reason, the name looked like that to me. they see their one little bit of turf, personal, fuck, I can't talk at all. This beer is very
responsibility.
Strong. No, not that
their
one.
Sphere of influence.
It's not China. the one thing that like they
their
control
station.
And that's their personal like wealth or personal value is based on this, right? Like how good do I do a job of being the nanny? Of being whatever, and it's how you rise in the ranks of this place. And even if you can't go anywhere else, you could take tremendous pride in a dumb way, in a way where you're being abused by the aristocrats, in being the really good shoe shiner guy or whatever the fuck it is. Like, this is where they derive their personal value from. So any time that that is besmirched, that's fighting words. Like, they have to defend it. I think that that's part of like the joke here. Like, look how these guys are fighting over dumb bullshit and totally missing the point that they're trapped in this ridiculous world.
This castle where everyone just does rituals that don't mean anything for no one.
And the people you're doing them for hate them.
Yeah.
The people that it's for, like, it's like you serve the Lord and the Lord himself is like, I fucking hate this shit. But nobody could escape samsara of aristocracy.
Steerpike is trying to break the cycle. He's the Buddha?
Sure.
Yeah, I don't know.
No, but because he wants to break the cycle, that means he like hasn't let go of desire or something.
Yeah, no, that's the metaphor doesn't really hold up.
None of them are enlightened.
No, they're all stupid. And then, you know, he thinks he's an owl and the Lord disappears and everyone's like, no one's seen him in a while. I guess we got to make the kid the Lord now, even though he's 1 year old. Baby King.
And Steerpike dresses as like a ghost and visits the twins and says, don't ever speak about the thing where I told you. I mean, Steerpike told you to burn down the library. And they believe, like, a guy in a sheet?
Well, he's stolen Sourdough's skull to put on top of the sheet. And also, they are addled by stroke, and we're not very bright to begin with. So it was a pretty easy con.
And then they hold a ceremony at the lake to make the baby the next Earl, the Earling. And then it's the
end real book. Earling in the morning, yeah.
I hate you so much.
And then it's the end of the book because that's in the baby. He drops. They have to hand the baby these two like things like that he has to hold. Like one is like a twig and the other is like anybody. The baby just drops it in the lake and everyone's like, oh no,
the sacred ornaments.
It's even the old dude doing the ceremony is like, why won't this baby perform the ceremony correctly? There's one scene where that was the end of the book. I'm going to say what I thought about the book, which is I'm going to nominate this as the most boring fucking book we've read.
Really?
I really think so. I think this is the most boring. Not the worst, the most boring. Like, there was a scene where everyone is sitting around a table, but it's just what you get is two pages of interior monologue, like interior thoughts from each of the people sitting around the table. There's literally nothing happening. It's just people, what they're thinking at the moment while they're all sitting around the table being bored.
Because they're not paying attention to the ritual. Because they're all, I guess they're bored as we are. And also the twins are both there and the other twin is like, her thoughts are all exactly the same except with the other name in them.
Yes. Like, I got more sleep this week.
while trying to read this book.
This book was like reading fentanyl. Like, I see why the border must be closed. Like, that shit was dangerous.
Like, I could not keep my eyes open.
It got to a point where I would get tired just thinking about reading this book. Like last night, like, I really got to finish this fucking book. And then everything lined up. I was like, I'm going to go to bed early tonight. This is awesome. And then that's brushing my teeth. Like, I'm going to read that fucking book. And I thought, no, I'm not. I'm just going to catch up on sleep. And today I didn't have work. I got to sleep in. And I was like, fuck it. There's no amount of sleep that could be too much right now. It was great. But it was, I really wanted to like it, guys. I really did.
I wanted to first, and then I didn't.
I didn't know anything about it, and like literally the first page, I was like, "Oh fuck, oh, no. It's one of these,
one of these."
I didn't even know yet that there was no plot, but I was already not liking it on the first page.
So I liked the writing because I like prolix writing, but this was too much even at some points. I highlighted a couple, like, what does this sentence mean? This is its own paragraph. The nebulous incoherence of things had changed in his brain as he stared down upon the still life group on the table to a frightening proximity.
Huh?
What? I feel like this guy, I mean, it was a book that was not thrilling that was then violated by a thesaurus. Like, it just went way too hard on it. And that really hurts the book. Like, he had some really... He needed a better editor or something. Like, there was really good stuff and then a lot of shit like that where you have to read it and, like, I don't know what that means. And when you're on deadline to read it, you're not going to find out.
I think the thing about this book is it's from the 40s. So, like, the style is not common anymore. I think nowadays... A fantasy book, if this is, you know, arguably fantasy or not, but a fantasy book would have all of this stuff plus a plot. So that's why they're all 900 pages. But they have like a million different like backstories and like characters that are all weird and wonky. And, you know, this book either needs a lot less or a lot more because it just had the background stuff. I don't know. I feel like it. Like, the characters were interesting. I thought some of them were pretty funny and odd and weird. But you could, you know...
There was no one to like. There was no... Okay, so the plot has many problems, one of which is, who's the protagonist? And I guess it's Steerpike, but you don't like him, you know? But the book is called
Titus Grown.
Yeah, but it's a baby that just sits there and is only in like one scene, so or two scenes, and doesn't do anything.
I think it's kind of like Foundations, where like the protagonist is like the society.
Then the book should have been called Gormenghast.
It's called the Gormenghast series,
right? But only afterwards, because in 1946, people weren't publishing books and like, this is Titus Grown, Gormenghast, Volume 1. Like, that was not a thing. Like it is today with, when a YA book comes out and they tell you already it's part of a series.
But like there wasn't a real thing where it was like there's a main character or even a character who not only are they trying to accomplish something, but you want them to succeed. Like, yes, Steerpike is trying to accomplish something, but you don't want him to succeed because he's just so annoying. And none of the other characters, although very quirky and original, are not, like, likable. You don't want to find out more about them because they're just boring and stupid. Also, nothing gets resolved. Absolutely. Like, if you look at the plot at the end, they're just like, oh, yeah, the Sepulcrave, he's just disappeared because he died, but nobody can find him. And then they make the baby the next Earl or whatever. That's it. So the sort of like central plot, which is Steerpike climbing the ladder and becoming thing, they didn't like discover his deception or he didn't rise to some big thing and become in charge. It's just sort of like bleh. it just sort of like ended and nothing got resolved at all.
I mean, was he intending to write a second book when he wrote this one? Like, I don't know.
Oh, yeah. He spent the next 20 years writing these books. I mean, I don't know if he... I think this is actually all set up as a prologue for what must come later. It's the only way this can make sense.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's a mystery baby across the lake that the... We didn't even talk much about the wet nurse who was like, my husband and my kid died, so I'll be a wet nurse for this kid, and then I gotta leave because I just want to be loved. And then she has an immediate love triangle and a nude knife fight between two guys who kill each other, and then she has another baby. And this all happens, like, by the way, this is still a character. Like, it's like Game of Thrones where they, like, jump around to different characters. You're like, why are we still talking about this fucking character? She left. It's like, I guess it's just set up. It's the long con, the even longer con than this book felt.
Well, I think maybe part of it is that it creates this world of the elaborate ritual and all that. And the baby from Go is fucking with the rituals. Because when the baby's christened, he fucks it up. He, like, knocks over the crown or something.
Someone drops him.
And then at the end, he fucking knocks the shit into the lake. Like, the baby is not playing along with the rituals. And that's a conflict for later, but it makes this a very boring book. It's like, imagine if George Lucas actually just made The Phantom Menace first. You're like, why did they ever make a second one? That was
Have you ever terrible. Heard about the epic disaster that really was the first cut of the first Star Wars movie?
The first one being Phantom Menace, or the first one?
The first one being A New Hope. Mm. There was an additional hour to it. It was an hour longer, and they showed it to, like, test audiences, and the test audiences were like, oh my God, what is this? And then they did an enormous amount of editing to, like, tighten up the story. And that's what turned into the first Star Wars in 1976 or whatever. But there was so much more to it, and it took so long, and it was so boring. It was literally saved by editors who were like, we're going to fix this for you. And then he didn't write or direct the next movies until The Phantom Menace. And look how that happened.
He didn't direct them, but he, like... He wrote the story, but not the screenplay.
Very much involved, but they says, like, George, we're going to help you out with your... He's great at ideas.
Yeah, basically got people who could take an idea and turn it into something good for Empire, and that's why it's good, because they didn't let him do much of it. He was running his toy empire at that point.
Dude is a goddamn gazillionaire.
Yeah. Because apparently... When, you know, he was, you know, negotiating the, like, when the movie rights, he was like, in the film company or the production company was just like, oh yeah, no, you can have the toy, right? You can have the merchandising rights, because no one had ever done that before. Fucking billionaire.
I saw something funny. I don't know how true this is. I'd like to believe it is. Disney spent, like, ridiculous amounts of money to purchase Star Wars and Marvel, like $4 billion on this and $4 billion on that. And, like, Bluey is like a third of all streaming hours on Disney Plus. Like, they're spending hundreds of millions of dollars a year to make more mediocre Star Wars content, and everyone just wants to watch the Australian dog cartoon.
It's also because people just leave that on loop so they don't have to watch their kids.
What? I've never done that. You know what, though? There are a lot of things you could put on to not watch your kids, like Coco Melon, that fucking Satan's asshole of a children's program. But Bluey's great. I've watched Bluey when my kid was asleep. That's just fucking...
Would you watch a series based on this? Could this be the next Game of Thrones? Like, put it on HBO, and, like, this is probably more like a BBC.
BBC did do it. Radio. I think they did it radio. And then it was a, like, it was on film. Wait, hold on. I swear I saw that.
I bet that'd somewhere. Be fine, but this would be
BBC.
Lame of Holmes is what this would be. Not.
It was a television miniseries. BBC and PBS did it. Probably Masterpiece Theater kind of thing.
Yeah, because then that works. The narrator on the TV show doesn't say, notice how the wrought iron on in this frame is showing a little pattern of rust on the side that just happens to match the birthmark of the chef walking by. Like, you could just see things. And, you know, this book is super detailed in describing stuff. And it's very gorgeous at times. Much, and this is where, that's probably the most similar thing to Lord of the Rings, is the ridiculous detailed descriptions of shit.
That and Dune.
Nothing flowed in this.
Well, I don't think we're going to read the second one until one of us motherfuckers makes the others do it.
Yeah, now we've entered into the Cold War phase where who will do it first?
Unless we just get a random email from an unknown person. Yeah. Hey, I would really recommend Gormenghast Book 2. You'll really like it.
Yeah,
from fucking, this is definitely not Nate at gmail.com. Yeah, right.
Nate hates Nate's dogs at Gmail.
His signature on the email is like, Mike and Jimmy are the ones that fuck the dogs. I don't want to. I'm so disappointed that this wasn't good. I think at another time in my life, I'll try to read this again when I have.
When I'm ready to die.
Yeah, when I'm like.
When I want to be put to sleep.
When I'm in hospice. Bring me Gormenghast. It's time.
Put me out of my misery. Leave the
Gormenghast and the morphine, please. It's over. No, I think this is a book. Obviously, it's not a book to. And we've said this about other things before. To try to burn through. Terrible idea. We were fucked from the beginning.
I think it would only have gotten marginally better. Or I think I would have only liked it marginally more if I didn't have to burn through it. I still wouldn't have liked it.
Well, then maybe we should read the next one, Jimmy.
No. No, I don't think so.
Okay, but can you name a more boring book we've done?
Sense and Sensibility.
Redeeming Love.
Oh, actually, you know what? Sense and Sensibility is a very strong contender.
I remember sitting on a plane and thinking, I have to read that fucking book so I can do the episode. And it's like, no, I'd rather sit here and stare at the seat in front of me than read Sense and Sensibility. Envelop me in your screaming sounds, airplane. Numb me from this.
I thought the Christian Hooker book was bad.
That was bad, but it wasn't boring because it was so absurd and stupid that it was at times like, wow, someone wrote this and people like this.
Yeah, I'm going through, I'm scrolling through. I can't, nothing jumps out.
It's going to be one of the old-timey British books, if anything.
No, Girl with a Dragon Tattoo is bad, but not this bad.
That was fine.
The Misses, or whatever the fuck the second one was.
Oh, yeah, that was, so, that was the worst. Absolutely, hands down the worst.
The actual
worst. I'm not saying this is the worst book. I'm saying, I'm saying it's the most boring book.
It's definitely up there.
In the past few weeks, I've had to read some manuals for work. They were way more interesting than this was.
All right. Yeah, that might be up. It might be. Yeah, every other book I'm looking at, that's like, oh, that was also shitty. Something happened. But, like, stuff did happen in this.
Yeah, but not anything that was worth it. What about The English Patient? That was pretty boring. Also, I was just confused the whole time.
They had a thing about calling his penis a seahorse, which I still remember that, and that was pretty exciting.
That really changed you.
I still don't know what that meant. It's like, look at him with his seahorse penis.
It means it keeps all the babies inside of it. Duh. It's got
a pouch? It's a sack, dude.
Anyway, if you're all still right. Awake, tell us what you thought. Send us an email to drunkguysbookclub@gmail.com.
And if you could think of something more boring, you should let us know. And follow us on X @DrunkGuysBC.
And also on Facebook and Instagram @DrunkGuysBookClub.
We've been getting more followers on Instagram, and they're only all of them bots. It's great.
Love those bots.
And we didn't mention the Patreon because no one should pay for anything after this book. It should just be, they're just spent it on something better. Don't endorse this. This is bad.
But you can join us for on Goodreads for free, because free is good. Like, we're free of this fucking book.
And check out the Hopped Up Network, a network of independent beer podcasters. And thanks for listening.